Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Lee Steinberg's got 40-plus years experience in the business. Sports agent, represented the number one overall pick in the draft 8 times. Wealth of information. If you haven't read his book, I encourage you to pick it up. But this is a guy who knows his stuff, and I love having him on. Thank you for making time for us, Lee.
My pleasure, John.
I was talking earlier in the show and on yesterday's show sort of about, you know, the business of sports and these teams are all trying to get back. And how are you handling, or how are your athletes handling, or what advice are you giving to your the people you represent who are now in limbo with their sports?
Well, I think in terms of football that we'll end up having a normal season. I think that quarantining is what a training camp's all about, and we still have 3 more months, so it wouldn't start in the NFL until August. I think they'll quarantine the player, and then I expect that this week they'll announce a regular schedule for NFL games. We'll start on September 10th, and they'll play a regular season. The next question is what happens in terms of fans, and I think there are ways to be creative. None of us really know what the situation will be like 4 months from now, and so everything's dependent on what the state of the virus is and the rest of it. But you could have fans come to a game, you could take their temperature, you could have them wear a mask, and you could create a grid that would socially distance themselves from each other if that was still a concern. And so maybe they wouldn't have 100% attendance, but maybe they'd have an 80,000 seat stadium, have 50,000 people in it, and just space them out. So I think that will end up being normal. The difficult thing for NFL draftees is the fact that in the past, they've gone off to mini camp and been with their teams, and then the teams have actually held them there in the month of May, and these young rookies have gotten a chance to work with other players on the team and with the coaches, and they've gone in to training camp much more experienced in the last 3 or 4 years than they would have been otherwise. So we're now having Zoom interaction between teams and these draftees. So you can pick up some of the playbook and expectations and all the rest, but it is not exactly the same as actually being there in person and getting a jump on the pro career.
Lee Steinberg with us, agent. You know, with that in mind, what do you tell your young players? Is what advantage or what angle should they be working? If they can't, you know, physically get that information, what beyond the meetings can they do?
Well, they can certainly start to master a playbook. They can certainly understand what coaches' expectations are for them. And they have to stay physically fit. Contemporary players do not go to spring training or training camp to work off the extra fat. They're in shape all year round. And so they've got to be physically doing the same sort of training that they'd be doing and working on stamina and speed and keeping their weight down.
The Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary is out. I got to think, as a sports agent, that it's interesting to you to kind of, you know, because you were around the game, you've been around the game in sports for 40 plus years. Are you watching the documentary? What are your takeaways, if so?
Well, I think it's really intriguing for people who are not in the business. I've represented a number of basketball players, so you sort of live with it, and you do understand that the players that make it have a work ethic that's different than other people, and they also have a passion and hunger to be great. And so, was Michael Jordan the absolute best athlete? Probably not. Was he great at every aspect of the game? Probably not. But what he did have was a killer instinct and a desire to absolutely demoralize his opponents, and so you get to see that.
That's interesting. Can you identify that as an agent when you are talking to a prospective client? Have you come away from some of those interactions over the years, you know, going, this guy's got it?
Yes. It's a critical factor. And so even in those first interviews, if you learn listening skills and learn how to probe another human being so you can understand their greatest anxieties and fears and their greatest hopes and dreams, cut below the surface of the standard responses and really bond emotionally, you will see that there are athletes who would be successful if they weren't athletes. They would be successful if they were doctors or lawyers or business people or coaches, because they have a real hunger to learn, and they are so driven to be successful. So I'm with Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver just got drafted by Denver, at the Super Bowl. And we walk up to Michael Irvin and to Jerry Rice, and he gets that chance. Well, instead of sitting there and posing for like a fan for a photograph or everything, Jerry Jeudy asks them, what is the secret to your success? What did you do in training that allowed you to have that longevity? What are the tips I can pick up? So there's a hunger to be great that you can sense. You knew that Patrick Mahomes was going to be successful because he was driven to excel at football. And the work these players are willing to put in is like the tip of the iceberg is watching them play. The totality of the iceberg is the incredible training they do and work they do. And it's a desire to keep getting better. It's not being satisfied ever.
Lee Steinberg with us, super agent and a guy who has represented the number one pick in the NFL draft a record 8 times. I was talking about endorsement deals and Nike being headquartered right here in the Portland metropolitan area is of interest to a lot of people. How have endorsement deals in football, basketball, maybe other sports, how different are they? Let's just use the NBA and the NFL as an example. How different are they, and does the NFL's relationship with Nike, has that changed what they're doing with young players over the years?
So what's interesting is that if you're talking about Michael Jordan, he had 100% name recognition. Every person who was not a basketball fan still knew him. Why was that? Nike, through high quality, good production values, clever scripts, built Michael Jordan into this huge off-the-field superstar. You may have never heard Michael Jordan talk, but you saw these ads that ran endlessly. So part of what I've always said to athletes is, if it's Nike, forget the money. What you want is them to build one of their campaigns around you, because it has such power, you know, and strength. What you have in endorsements is, if an athlete can achieve brand, so how many people out of 100,000 know who he is, today, there's social media. So one of the biggest changes has been the fact that a clever athlete can brand himself on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and create a huge identity where people get to know them. This didn't exist when you started. So when you walk in to do an endorsement for a player, the Nikes of the world will say, how many Twitter followers do you have? The currency in endorsements is that name recognition. And also playing dramatically in big games. But the point is, what's shifted is that we now have a whole new way for athletes to communicate with the public in creative websites and social media.
There are very few NFL players that sort of stand above when you look at the individual deals. Patrick Mahomes is one of them. You've got Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson and maybe Odell Beckham Jr. is sort of the guys. It looks like the younger players, maybe it's a wait and see. Does Nike have enough swooshes on the field because of their deal with the NFL, or is that overblown?
No, I still think that for many athletes, they grow up wanting to be in Nike. And it's just the advertising is so clever. The networking they do is so clever. So there's Adidas and Reebok and some other alternatives. Patrick Mahomes did not go with Nike. He went with Adidas. So, but Nike's always been like the Cadillac to a lot of young athletes, and they aspire to it. Now, faced with a situation where company A is offering twice as much money, they may quickly alter that allegiance. But the reality is that Nike is probably the strongest single brand in sport. And Michael Jordan, whose doc you referenced, is a large part of that.
Lee Steinberg with us, agent, NFL agent, other sport agent, been doing it for more than 40 years. The name, image, likeness discussions in the NCAA have created a lot of discussion about what might an endorsement for a college athlete look like. How does that figure into your sphere as you look at it?
Well, first of all, outside of high school baseball players, I don't think I've ever talked to a 17 or 18-year-old athlete. There are not going to be these opportunities for very many players. Basketball, probably not, because the best players go one and done, and by the time they would get that brand and name recognition, they're gone into the pros. But football, it's probably the quarterbacks. It would be the equivalent of a Jameis Winston. It would be, or Johnny Manziel, or Tua, sometimes a running back like a Reggie Bush, but it's not really going to impact the lives of 99.9% of the players. California SB 206 started the trend because when California did it, it stimulated other sports to say, other states to say, well, we better compete because we don't want California athletes having the advantage and those colleges recruiting so well. And that pushed the NCAA to talk about this. What's strange is the concept that a 17-year-old getting ready to enter college could all of a sudden hire a marketing agent, and you assume that the person helping them market would be the agent ultimately for the pros. So it moves the whole level of competition much earlier, and all of a sudden players that in football for 3 years would not thought much about representation or marketing are all of a sudden in the market.
Yeah, that's interesting. Does that complicate your world? I mean, do you dread the idea of, hey, Lee, you might have to start representing kids younger, or how do you approach that?
I think that the competition to represent a top college quarterback or a top college running back will start much earlier. And all of a sudden, it might occasion a situation where if you didn't get the equivalent of Tua Tagovailoa as he came out of Hawaii to go to Alabama, and someone signed as a marketer, and we do marketing, and so it accelerates the whole process of professionalizing and talking about agents for someone who previously would have been years away from even thinking about that. But here's the thing. The scholarship's never been enough, especially for players in urban areas to live on, and they can't work during the school year as a practical matter or even in the summer. So they are sometimes left at a lower standard of living than their non-athletic peers. And they feel abused because they see their loaded stadiums and big TV contracts and their jersey number being sold at the student store. So that opens the door to looking for agents or alums to supplement that income. And it's precisely these few players who would have the biggest need and the most attraction. So hopefully it cleans up that area.
Lee Steinberg is our guest. You know, we're watching the NFL do a better job, I think, of protecting players, being more aware to player safety than they were decades ago. You've seen the spectrum in 40-plus years from Steve Bartkowski through Troy Aikman and Steve Young. Those two guys come to mind, Steve Young and Troy Aikman, when I think about player safety. And I wish that the NFL had been more aware for years. Do you find your mind drifting to the what ifs when you talk, when you see the NFL and the sort of their awareness that exists now?
I had a crisis of conscience back in the late 80s, early 90s, because I kept seeing players get hit in the head and doctors couldn't tell us how many was too many and what the magic number was. So in 1994, I had my first concussion conference where Steve Young, Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, Drew Bledsoe, and a number of players came and met with neurologists. I've held 14 of them since, and most recently at our Super Bowl party. And, I mean, the reality is every time an offensive lineman hits a defensive lineman at the inception of a play, it creates a low-level subconcussive event. So an offensive lineman could walk out of football with 10,000 of those hits aggregated in high school, college, and professional, which will do the same thing that we discovered three knockout blows do, which is to exponentially raise the risk of Alzheimer's, ALS, premature senility, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and depression. So I've been campaigning for years to try to bring awareness, treatment, and cure to this area. And it's let's suppose 50% of the mothers in this country realize that the danger to the brain, and tell their teenage boys you can play any sport, but not tackle football. It wouldn't kill football, but it would turn it into a gladiator sport, where only people with severe economic problems would play it.
Lee Steinberg with us. I remember the retirement of Aikman. I remember Steve Young stepping away. I remember how surprised a lot of people were. You were close with those guys and those decisions. When you're talking with players who tell you, hey, I've had enough, what goes into that discussion? How much counsel do you give them?
Well, you have to be intimately involved in that process. The truth of the matter is I've virtually never met an athlete who willingly retired from sports. They get too old, teams don't want them, and even when they seem to have gracefully retired, if you represent them, you know that they're yearning to come back and play. I mean, like Rob Gronkowski. And it never surprised me when Brett Favre unretired multiple times because they missed the structure, the camaraderie with other players, the competition. It's what they've known. And so most athletes under the surface have to be pushed out of the sport to ever retire.
Lee Steinberg with us. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your expertise and you coming on to talk about things. Before I cut you loose, you watched Patrick Mahomes win a Super Bowl, realize a dream. He's still a young man. No doubt he'll stay hungry, but that's got to be satisfying for you as an agent to see a guy that you've been with all along.
It really, if you represent football players, is nothing like the rush that comes from having a quarterback win the Super Bowl and be MVP. And then we had a year where we had a couple of high draft picks with Tua Tagovailoa and Jerry Jeudy, and that's also a thrill. And the last thing that's really a high point is having players go into the Hall of Fame, and we had our 11th with Edgerrin James will go in this summer. So not every year is like this, but this one's been sort of fun.
Lee, I appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Lee Steinberg, agent, 41 years of expertise, and a whole bunch of players represented. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. The 2 at 2 is next. Well, what have we done on today's show? Jonathan Smith was with us in hour number one, the Oregon State football coach. He said there's a light at the end of the tunnel. He's planning on playing some college football games. I think that's good. You have to. You have to prepare as though you're going to have games. You can't start from a position of saying, well, we don't know, guys. No, he's got a plan to play games, and that's what Jonathan Smith is doing. I think it's smart. And I think that for those of you who are eager to see a college football season, I just think sometimes it's nice to hear college football coaches talk about playing college football games.
I do. I'm optimistic that we can didn't get to this fall and be playing some football games. Yeah. And so I've just kind of messaged it to our team is like there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. We don't exactly know how long this tunnel is. But we know there is a light, and we're going to be playing some football at some point, which I'm pretty confident we can get some games played this fall, optimistically thinking that way. And so we got to prepare that way.
Jonathan Smith preparing as though they're going to play. And that's, you know, a Major League Baseball player doesn't show up to the stadium on a cloudy, potentially thunderstorm day going, I don't know if we're going to get this one in. No, they show up saying, we're going to play. I'm going to be, I'm going to be the right fielder today. Who's the opposing pitcher? They're watching film. They're planning to play. So Jonathan Smith getting his team going. We also talked on today's show about which entities will be uniquely qualified to take advantage of this pandemic. And yeah, I'm going to use that terminology. I think Amazon has taken advantage. I think Peloton has taken advantage. I saw the news today that Peloton came out and said that they're up like 50% quarterly workouts. Get an idea. Here's the workouts on Peloton. Quarter three of last year, 17,988 workouts. Quarter three of this year, 44,155. They're up three times. So, yeah, they've taken advantage, right? So which sports entity is going to take advantage? We talked about the UFC, the NFL, Major League Baseball. I think baseball is going to be a little more nimble than some of the others. I still remain perplexed on the NBA and what they're going to do. If they can't have fans in the stadium, in the arenas, can they make money? Is it worth it to play? Hell, on a night-to-night basis in the NBA, it's a crapshoot whether or not both teams really want to be there. It really is. Which team wants to be here more is the first question that people gambling on NBA games have to ask themselves. All right, it's a Thursday night, mid-season. One of these teams is headed to the lottery. One of them is headed to the playoffs. It's a road game for the team that's headed to the playoffs. Do they want to be here? I mean, tell me I'm wrong. that has been a question for years in the NBA. Which team wants to be? It's like a college football bowl game. Which team really wants to be here? That's the first thing you got to consider. So I don't know what the NBA is going to do. And then we visited with Lee Steinberg, super agent, sports agent, guy who represents Patrick Mahomes and Tua, among others. And he talked a lot about endorsements, particularly the allure of Nike, how endorsements have changed over the year. Fascinating to hear him talk about Nike. Fascinating to hear him talk about sort of the draw that Nike has and how it is more about Nike's ability to tell your story than it really is about the dollars that you get in those deals. What is the real value? Lee Steinberg was great. If you missed that, grab a podcast. All right, my wife's going to pop in studio. I don't know where this is going
to be. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.